If you ask them to name three geniuses, they probably wouldn't say Einstein, Newton, you know. They'd go Brent, Partridge, Sessions. It's Flats and Shanks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of our weekly podcast. I'm David Flatman.
I'm Tom Shanklin.
Okay, fella.
It's good to be back.
Oh, isn't it? God, what a feeling.
Sorry about the week off.
Yeah. Excuse me, sorry about my choking. Sorry about the week off, but Shanks got this annoying habit of putting his family first, which I don't do that, guys, because I look at this as you're my family. You know, so my family are sort of contractually obliged to be there almost through the law of marriage, but you guys are here optionally, so you guys are my real friends.
You're married to the job, that's your problem, mate.
Married to the job.
I work too hard, too bloody hard sometimes.
Too bloody hard sometimes. I worry about myself.
Yeah, and we're coming to you live from Tbilisi.
Well, we'll say live.
Well, we are live.
Suppose so.
So if you're in the area, come say hello.
We're alive. If there's any background music, there is a sort of panpipe mood CD on in this hotel lounge area. Tommy, tell them where we are.
We're in Rooms Hotel in Tbilisi,
nice
in
spot.
Georgia. We've come out here for the BBC. We're journalists, basically. We're reporters. We've come out to find...
You're like Kate Adie.
We've come out to find out about Georgian rugby.
Who we are. Sorry, Georgian rugby.
Yeah. Wales are playing them in a couple of weeks' time. So this has been sanctioned by the Beeb, and we've done a little bit of filming so far already.
By NATO.
We've been in... UNICEF. We've been into the Georgian rugby camp, and we've chatted to the coaches.
Yeah. We're doing all
Milton
sorts.
Milton Hague, head coach.
We'll tell them all about it. And I realised when we got here, I had three mates on the Georgian coaching staff that I had no idea were here.
Yeah,
but we'll talk about that. But I mean, let's just wind it back and let's talk in detail about a rugby match that happened 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, whenever we last spoke to people. Let's make this completely irrelevant from the very start for everyone that's listening. Or should we skip that? And just, you know, talk about what you've been up to.
Oh, mate, well.
Mate.
Been to America.
Of course you have.
Yeah.
Took the kids to Disney, didn't he? What a dad.
Yeah. I know, Father of the Year. Got a T-shirt, says
you it. Got a mug?
T-shirt. Started off pretty badly, really. I wasn't happy with the plane. I'm not a snob.
You are not a snob.
I'm not a snob, you know that. But it was a plane, honestly, that I've travelled on probably 20 years ago.
You can't be a snob unless you live in London or Bath, basically.
Yeah. It's a plane I travelled on 20 years ago. The TV, my iPhone screen was bigger than a TV.
Oh, one of those?
Yeah.
Oh, sir.
And the guy behind me had a book on the back of his seat, and I was digging into my back.
You could feel his book?
And it was like a 9.5 hour flight. We get there, and it's a 2 hour queue to get through border control.
Mother.
Two little kids. I was just
fuming. Isn't it funny how you
fuming.
Can... How is it funny how it takes 2 hours to get into America with kids for security, but you can go down to Kmart and buy a gun?
Let's not get into that.
Separate subject. Kind of crazy, but...
So...
What airline was it? Let's just out somebody. We're not sponsored by airlines.
No, it was British Airways.
British Airways, and it was terrible.
Well, it was... The plane flew there, and we got there in one piece, and that was fine.
You went there and you landed. Yeah, but you'd hope that anyway.
You'd like to think that planes and aviation have
was
moved
it that
on.
Bad that you would
interior design has moved on.
Was it that bad that you would upgrade to business class given
the
option?
No, I'd never do that. And also, one of the kids' TVs didn't work, which is a nightmare, especially trying to keep them.
That's painful.
Happy on the flight.
Well, the TVs are their parents.
All
really,
they wanted to do was
days.
Get on the plane and watch Captain Underpants.
Yeah.
And they couldn't. I wouldn't let them sit in my seat and watch my TV.
Because you had movies to watch yourself.
Yeah, of course I did.
But if you turn them up loud enough, you can't hear the kids crying, I've found.
So anyway, good trip.
Yeah.
Good trip. Loads to do. Kids loved it. Just went to see their faces. But I got a few issues with America.
Oh, God. Is gun control one of them?
No, gun control. I didn't see any guns out there. But
they were there, mate.
They were there.
All right, lads. Our BBC producer and cameraman are just walking past. They're lovely guys. Guys, keep walking, okay? You're not part of this, so.
But mate, the Americans are absolutely massive.
Are you generalising now?
No. Every single one.
Every single one?
No, they're not all. Absolutely massive. But so many large people in America.
Just say fat, mate.
No. No, you're not allowed to say the F word.
Well, okay. Okay, if they're...
obese.
Well, there were loads and loads of large people in the UFC. That's not a bad thing.
Overweight.
Right, okay.
Okay, now...
there were loads and loads of fat people. Just say it.
Loads and loads of overweight people there. I couldn't believe how big some of them were. Getting around the parks was a nightmare because everybody had mobility scooters. And I'm not saying they didn't have...
everybody.
I'm not saying everybody.
I'll stop doing this stuff now. Yeah, go on then.
You know, I know I exaggerate a little bit. My missus actually had a go at me the other day for exaggerating.
Did she?
I said, what? God, I was so surprised and he tripped over my own penis. Look, if someone can't walk properly, or if someone's not very well, someone's poorly.
What they call these days, disabled. Are you okay with disabled people, Tom? Are they all right by you? I know you've always hated my brother for being disabled, but I thought he's the only one.
I can understand that, but there was too many people on mobility scooters, and it wasn't a coincidence that they were overweight.
Having said that...
And that's just a nightmare in the queuing systems as well, trying to get round them. Also, families with like double pushchairs, you know, where they've got room for two babies. If you're in a pushchair and you're wheeling your kids around Disney, they're too young.
Yeah.
They can't go on the rides.
Yeah.
You're better off going down to McDonald's and seeing Ronald McDonald and a Hamburglar.
Yeah, that's how they end up obese, mate. Thing is, you put me on a set of scales or one of those machines at Asda like we did years ago for 20p, and the screen goes red and says, consult your physician because you are obese. But I've used a mobility scooter at B&Q in just outside Bath a couple of times when I had a bad Achilles, and it was amazing. It was amazing. So once you've done it, mate, and then you think, well, I could fill out a form at the post office and get one from the local government to drive around town on. It's no. Like, do you know,
you can't get past them.
No jokes. Because I got this electric mountain bike that my wife thought she'd be able to share with me. Turns out she can't. It's too big and powerful. So she was joking around saying, oh, we live up this hill. Imagine if I got a mobility scooter to go to the shops and back. It'd be amazing and it'd be electric. So I wouldn't have to park the car. So she was like, there's a shop in Bath that sells them. They sell them.
Oh, she's quite happy for you
and
to
she's
get
like,
one.
She's like, have a look at this. No, she wants one. Oh, she can't ride my bike. And she's like, I mean, they're quite expensive. Oh. Second hand, £1,700.
Don't,
but it's,
mate,
got, it's got alloys.
Don't.
It's got alloys on it.
Don't.
She might get one.
You know, you're queuing behind them. You're trying to get past them.
Yeah. Put a twig in their spokes, mate.
Also, though, I'll tell you another thing that really, really annoyed me, which shouldn't, is the over-friendliness of the Americans.
Yeah, but you hate people.
I don't hate people. Like, when I'm in the right mood, I'm brilliant. But walking past them in the corridor.
Good morning.
Yeah. How are you, sir?
How are you? You don't care. You don't know me.
No. And
why do you care?
You know, the waiters and waitresses just being super duper nice. I know it's fake. They just want a good tip. And then the bill comes and it
says, I'll give you a bloody tip.
It says under the bottom clearly 18 to 20% service charge.
Yeah.
And therefore, I feel really bad and I've got to tip them then. And that just pisses me off even more.
You don't like the tipping culture?
Because, not really. Just pay them more. They say, oh, we survive off tips. Just pay them a decent wage then.
Yeah, it's funny how they don't... Why don't they, whoever they are... Again, these are the people that refuse to stop letting people buy guns in shops. Why don't they start paying their waiting staff properly? Why don't they pay them more than a poverty wage? And pay them properly so that if you want a tip, it's a genuine tip. We're not actually paying their wages because that's your job because you own the restaurant.
If I walk past someone, like...
But I will tip because I'm a nice guy, but you're not as nice as me.
If I walk past someone, I'll have a nod like that. Maybe something like...
Fella.
But I don't want to stop and have a conversation about my day.
But you didn't like it when we lived together in London and I was friendly to our neighbours. You genuinely didn't like it.
Don't make friends with neighbours, mate. It ends up in a nightest war then. You get over-friendly, you go around their houses...
But then it's like, I don't want to invite them back.
All of a sudden then, you know, their wife fancies you.
What?
And it just turns into a nightmare. And then you can't get away from them. Never make friends with your neighbours. Always.
There's this lady that lives next to us in Bath.
Unless they're really old.
She's probably a pensioner. She has lives on her own with her dog. She's got this little border terrier called Bluebell, which is vicious, and I quite like that. Loves people, but it's vicious towards dogs, and because it's so little, it's quite funny. But she's moved in, she's bought a 6-bed house, right? And she's smashed it to bits, turned it into a super, like an ultra modern white walls and glass three bed, so she's probably smashed its value to bits and doesn't care. She's got Netflix and Sky TV, and she's put a 65-inch plasma on the wall.
How old is she?
And at night, she's probably mid to late 60s. And she said, I just suddenly realised I was doing everything I was supposed to do, and I don't care. I bought this amazing house. I've made it exactly how I want it. I'm living the life I want to live. I'm walking my dog, seeing my friends, and I'm drinking wine in front of the telly. I was like, what a legend.
Mm.
So she's a neighbour I'll be friends with, you see, because she doesn't GAF.
Yeah,
she doesn't
GAF. But you have got ulterior motives with that, haven't you?
What?
Get
the will. Yeah, she's got kids, apparently, unfortunately. But I'll try and have them erased.
I know what you like as well. You like that guy out of Little Britain, loves old people. Takes him to the toilet. Oh, I need the toilet. I'll take you. Sucking their toes. Giving them foot massages.
Oh, don't.
Horrific.
She listens to this. Jokes.
So all in all, though, good trip. Loads
Americans
of Disney.
Are too fat.
Yeah, but some cracking rides. Universal.
Yeah.
Amazing. You've got like Despicable Me, three ride. You've got the Harry Potter ride. They're all like 3D now, so you don't actually move on these rides. They tilt you back and forward. And when you have the feeling of going down sort of hill, wind blows up at you. I know they're not. It's not your cup of tea. But
No.
The Avatar ride is very good in Animal Kingdom as well.
Oh, well done.
Yeah.
Well.
Anyway, what have you been up to?
Glad you enjoyed it. We've been half term, isn't it? And it's been an unusual half term.
You've had a week to yourself, haven't you?
Well, two, actually.
Yeah.
So my in-laws, as you know, are from Holland, and they live in London, but they're Dutch, and they retain a residence in Holland, which means they got a flat. And they took my two children to Holland for a week, which was great. Did you know that in Holland, because it's very bikey, there's on the government, every child gets free bike riding lessons. They get taught to ride a bike for free on the government in Holland. So I've been doing, we live in a hilly area, so I've been driving them to places, two bikes in the car, trying to find a flat area, car parks and stuff, and getting there. They learnt in one day in Holland how to ride bikes.
Don't you want to, as a father, don't you want to like pass down that knowledge of you know, your daughter or your
Yeah, but someone else has done it, so happy ride. Days. Someone else done it, happy days, happy with
right.
that.
Yeah.
So I get them back, ready made, done. So they went there for a week and they came back.
You should have just adopted.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about adopting. I still am, but I want to adopt a 21-year-old who went to private school who's just finished their degree. So kind of done. And we're going to start working at HSBC or something.
What sex?
Hey?
What sex?
Male.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, I want a posh, really nice kid who's going to do really well. Already
I'd
made.
I quite fancy adopting like a 37-year-old bloke.
Yeah?
Yeah. Someone I can have a chat with in the house.
Hang on a minute.
Play some table tennis against.
Hang on a minute. I know a guy. the kids went away for a week and they landed back on the Monday, which is not terribly interesting, except that...
Skip it if you want.
They landed back and picked them up from Bristol Airport and went straight to a Little Mix concert in Cardiff. So I took them straight to Little Mix. And in that, what's that?
Here's a shout out to my ex.
Yeah, is that... It's 7,500 seats. It's that arena.
Motorpoint
Arena. And I try and say this constructively, but it was quite a bit of a dump, actually. But I was thinking, why don't we do a live event there, live pod? We'd sell 7,500 seats, surely.
With Little Mix?
It's you and me.
Okay, oh, I thought Little Mix then. I was going to say, oh, I really like Perry.
We've sold 200 seats in Bath. Surely we can sell 7,500 in Cardiff.
Yeah, live pod coming up next week.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
Anyway, Little Mix, and we rushed to get there on time and realised, of course, they don't do on time. So we were sitting, the kids, I mean, it's not anyone else's fault, they've flown from Holland, and sitting in our chairs for 2 hours before they came out. So by the end of the set, we had two asleep kids, basically.
You went as well?
Oh, yeah.
Well, fair dues, mate.
Did the whole thing, mate. I was up there dancing.
Like Die Young, when he have to take his boys to see Blue.
Yeah. Did he?
Have to do all the dances with them.
Yeah, you got to do it. I know all the words to it. So.
Yeah.
What the annoying thing was, everyone's seated, right, of course. And right, with all the seats in front of us are empty. You're like, genius. And then at 8:29, 1 minute before they came out, six adults arrived. Really nice people. They arrived and boom, sat in front of us.
Do they have any kids?
No kids. And they were like, I was like, cool, you're not here with kids? Like, no, we love it, we love it. And she goes, just so you know, we are going to stand up. And I was like, I said, are you serious? Like, yeah, I've got to stand up. I can't sit down. And I was like, just so you know, I was like, just so you know, if you stand up, our kids won't be able to see Little Mix. So what do we do about that? And they're like, sorry, we can't not stand up. And they stood up. As soon as they came out, they stood up and they did not sit down for the whole set.
They weren't all there, were they?
So I have to pick up the kids and hold them up. And she's seven, so I'm quite strong, but it was brutal, absolutely brutal. And as soon as I stand up, the people behind us can't see.
Yeah.
So in the end, people behind us are shouting at me. And I'm like, guys, it's fucking them. So in the end, I tap this lady on the shoulder. And I was like, listen, I want you to enjoy the concert, but turn around. And all these people are going mad at her. I was like, you guys are ruining it for 10 rows of people. You're ruining the concert for 10 yeah. rows of people who've brought their kids.
Actually.
Like, we bought tickets too, you know. I was like, you. And at the end, they were like, to the kids, do you enjoy it? I said, do you know what? We're not mates. I'm quite friendly, you know. I said, we're not friends. You are not the sort of people.
So you got a bit of me in
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I said, you have been bad people today. Like I just said to them, seriously shit form. Anyway, Little Mix. So that was fine. Went to two broken kids, absolutely exhausted. Got home at 12:30. And then the kids flew to Disney World the next morning with my wife. And I had to stay at home, unfortunately, because I had work to do.
For a week. A week
yeah.
on your own?
A week. Well, the first week was on my own as well, really.
Is that why you're wearing glasses? I just, you know, with Little Mix, just on that, you know, they've got loads of different songs, but some of the songs got some rude words in them. So when we got it on in the car,
yeah,
it's like one line is, we should be getting better sex.
Yeah, I know.
I got cough over that. I know that.
Sets like tennis.
Oh,
say. Yeah, they think it's tennis. So they love tennis now.
Oh, obviously.
But yeah, but while they're in Holland, I went to Devon for a couple of days on my own, to chill. And Danny Grucott was down there with his family, so all these big plans. And then my dog swallowed a piece of Tupperware and had major surgery.
Really?
And he had his stitches out yesterday, so that blighted that trip a little bit. He's all right. Yeah. So then a week away, and the kids are away for a week in Disney. And
I spoke to you a couple of times when they were away, and you were properly
chill.
Like ladding it up. You were, you had the Bluetooth earphones in, speaking to me, opening the door, Domino's pizza.
Yes, true.
Keep the change. And he's not given a tenner either. No, that's 20 quid. That's a large pizza and a couple of chasers.
Brings it up a large to about pizza 17 and chicken pounds. Wings, £18. So I only
there
gave
we
150.
Are. Yeah.
Yeah, so true.
You ate like a king.
I ate one, I cooked one meal the whole time. The rest of it is...
What's that?
I hate Deliveroo in Bath. It's awful. Deliveroo is terrible, but I used it every day.
When you say cooked, you mean prepared?
Cooked.
Okay.
Cooked.
Okay,
but that's just putting meat in a hot pan. That's all. That's it. I just ate meat on its own with ketchup. But yeah, so I did a lunch with John Bentley, British Lions legend.
Yes.
Up at York, and York race is big. You've done it before, actually, and
nailed it.
Yeah, apparently you nailed it. And they said, As always, everywhere I go where you've done a do, everyone always says, we got Shanks because Nigel Owens pulled out last minute. I mean, insert your own gag. And then insert your own gag about saying insert your own gag. And I was like, I bet Shanks started with, sorry, Nigel couldn't make it. He was stuck in Barry.
And they're like, No, I didn't.
Where was he? Stuck in where?
Chester.
There you go. So...
Or Sydney,
yeah, or Leicester. We've done all that, or Warwick, we've done it all. So, went up there, and I spent I was sitting next to Paul O'Connell. He was like special guest. So I did the after dinner thing, but he was the special guest for the Q&A with John Bentley. And you kind of expect Paul O'Connell to be a good bloke, but I didn't expect him to be such a good bloke. I didn't want to leave him. I did not want to leave him in the end. What a lovely, lovely man.
Yeah, he was. Well, I did it with Thomas Cassinet a couple of years before. And he's really, really good at English.
Yeah.
His English is superb. So there's not many French people that can stand up and talk for 25 minutes, you know, off the cuff and be funny as well.
Yeah.
But he spoke before me, so I went up and said, ladies and gentlemen, didn't Bruno Toglioni do so well? Put your hands together.
I got rinsed by this... The MC was a guy called Malcolm Lord. And you listen to this pod, there's a very good chance you haven't heard of this guy. If you find a way, like, go on, if he's got a website, find it. This guy is so funny. He's a huge guy. Like, he's eaten a bit too much. He sits in his wheelchair at a table next to the stage. No one can see him because he can't get on the stage because of his wheelchair. And he reads out jokes that he's written from a bit of paper. And you think, well, how funny can that be? Well, actually, very, very, very funny. And he introduced me. And it was just everything he said was there. It was like Paul O'Connell came off after half an hour, 40 minutes, and he like rapturous applause because he's an absolute icon.
Of course.
And just you can tell immediately he's just the best bloke going. And he comes off and he was like, God, what a speech that was. Amazing. Just fantastic. And just interesting, apart from anything else. I'll tell you what I learned during that speech. There are 312 halogen lights in the ceiling of this fucking room. You know, and he just ripped into Paul O'Connell. And I was next and he ripped into me. So I stood up there and said, I did not come all this way to get abused by fucking Ironside. And we piled into him and he was great fun. And he told this brilliant, he was there with his wife and he told this brilliant story. And that in the end, the camera found him. So it goes onto the live screens because he can't get up on the stage. And I'm telling you now that it obviously is a joke. So when you tell someone a joke, you realise, you know, it isn't funny. But he was like, you know, John Bentley said, have you been? He goes, yeah, we're fine. We're good. It's good to be here. We had a bit of a rough week, but or really sort of last week it was really, but we said we'd be here. We've been coming here for 12 years and we weren't going to miss it. And everyone sort of claps, but they're wondering what's happened, you know. And he says, well, we had a call from the RNLI, the local Coast Guard, near where we live in Whitby, whatever it was. And he was like, you know, and unfortunately I found my lovely wife, Jane, still with me today, Jan, there she are. And everyone says, hiya, you know, been there for 12 years, not missed a lunch. And it's like, unfortunately, they found her mother, and they found her, and it was a bit, you know, she's very old now, and she doesn't quite know what she's doing, and they found her, and unfortunately, they found her in the water. She was in the water, you know, so they called us to let us know, and everyone was sort of laughing a bit. He goes, no, they found her face down, she were dead. And it's like, everyone's like, whoa, and he's proper serious, and he's welling up.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, and we're talking, and at this point, we don't know he's funny. We think he's... guy in a wheelchair, yeah. Whatever.
He could just be the MC.
He talks about being there for the charity, which supports people, you know, whatever. And you know, a lot of it was a Doddy Weir, neuron disease, that sort of stuff. So we're thinking he's there to support the charity. And he starts saying, he goes, yeah, and the course guy said to me, it's awkward because she's been here a while and doesn't look good. And, you know, there's all sorts of stuff on her. You know, it's kind of on her. They're gripped onto her. There's, you know, there's three or four lobsters on her and there's all sorts of stuff on her and crabs and mollusks and... What do I do? What do I do, Malcolm? And I said, well, look, you keep two of the lobsters. I'll have two and set her again in the morning. The whole room was just in absolute pieces. And the best bit about it was his wife, who was his wife, was sitting next to him. And she's heard every joke a million times. She has got a completely blank face. Nothing, like she hasn't heard a word. And I was sitting next to Paulie. I call him Paulie now, Paul O'Connell, because we're really close friends. I was sitting next to him with Paulie and we were just looking at his wife and pissing ourselves. It was set her again in the morning. It was fucking hilarious.
When I went there, he goes, here he is, Tom Shanklin. Looked like one of the Mitchells.
Yeah.
Peggy.
he was very, very funny. And anyway, he could list his gags forever. And I said to him, God, genuinely, I was like, I'd love to just write down every one of your gags because I love them. I'm not going to nick them because I don't do one-liners. But I just love them and I want to tell my mates about them.
Yeah.
And he said, check under your seat. And he said, there's a book under there. You can have that for a tenner. And he's written a book of all of his gags and one-liners.
Okay.
I've got the book. I'll send it to you. Yeah. I'll lend it to you. And it is genius. I've read a few and it is just genius.
Oh, fair dues.
Yeah. So Rob Vickerman was there, the England Sevens player. Lovely, yes. Lovely man. And his wife, I always thought he was making up the fact he was married. He's had a hair transplant. He's had the hair done.
No way.
Yeah, it's the best. I've known loads of lads that have done it. Vicks is the best I've seen by a mile. It looks completely
and
natural.
He's open about it as well.
Yeah, except he's going bald on the back now. He's have to get another one done. Oh, we met his wife, Gemma. She's absolutely lovely.
He's going to look like that baddie out of Despicable Me 3. The disco one. Oh, it's really good.
Alex Crockett was there. Remember him? Bath legend.
The Pocket Rocket?
Yeah.
What are they doing up there? Just supporting you? Or?
No, Vicks lives up there. And Crocs coaches at a school. He coaches at Hull Ionians with Martin Wood, the old England scrum half.
Yeah.
Who apparently is really abusive on the sideline and keeps getting warnings. And Crocs coaches at a big school up there. And Dan Hyde, you wouldn't remember Dan Hyde. Dan Hyde played for Leeds, but he played for England A as well. I played with Heidi for a bit.
Knew that was going to be his nickname.
Sorry, I played with Daniel. Ace, with Shooter. So yeah, it was very nice too, yeah. Thanks for asking.
No worries at all. So good trip up to York then.
Yeah, it was very good actually. I had to get up and down in a day, which is a bit punchy, but I'm a great guy and I love charity. So,
yeah.
But do you know Paul O'Connell? Mm. So I said to him, "Nice to meet you," and he said, "Oh, we've met before."
Nice Flats. To meet you.
Nice to meet you. I said, "We've met before." He goes, "We met before," and I was like, "Oh, it's just one of those awkward moments where I don't remember you." And he was like, no, I played England schoolboys against you in 1998 at Stourbridge, which isn't far from here. I was like, yeah, I know. How do you know that? And he goes, oh, at the end of the game, I remember, and he told everyone on stage in the end and everyone was laughing. he was like, I remember we all swapped shirts.
A tickly cough of you.
Yeah, I have, sorry. And we all, as soon as we swapped shirts, we all whipped your England ones on really quick because we were all, he goes, we were all really white and freckly and in terrible nick.
Yeah.
And he goes, then Alex Sanderson took his top off and we were like, holy wow. Crap. He is, I mean, he was and is in unbelievable condition. Al, he was a freak like, even at that age and he's still got a rig on him now. So Al takes his top off, then Tony Rock, the flanker, takes his top off, then Johnny Wilkinson, and they're all like, eight packed up with super nick. And then Sherry and I take our tops off and we're not lean, but we're big and we clearly lift a lot of weights and stuff. And he goes, you guys just put our tops over your shoulders and you beat us. And we're like, oh my God, that's why you beat us.
Yeah.
And he remembers being in a scrum where their tight head tried to give me a dig and I, not trying condoning violence, I punched their tight head a couple of times and then their flanker punched me and Al Sanderson just put this like semi-pro boxer combo on whoever their flanker was and everyone just stopped and it was like, oh my God, he's 18. And he's like, he looks like a high level boxer.
You boys should be in the blazing squad.
Yeah, Al was the hardest guy on the. I'm telling you now, Al Sanderson was the hardest guy on the circuit, under 21s, under 18s.
Okay.
Nobody messed with Al. He was unbelievably hard. So he remembered all that detail and remembered what we did after the game, remembered the score, remembered who played, all that sort of stuff. Super nerd. But then when he said, oh, I've met Flats before, we swapped shirts with him and he just left, chopped it over his shoulder and we were like, geez, look at the nick he's in. Because he was in great nick then. And then 700 people pissed themselves because I'm fat now. But I loved him. But this bloke walks up to me as I came off the stage and he was like, hi, Flats, I'm engaged. And I was like, great, can you announce it? Can you announce that I'm engaged? I've just got engaged. And this bloke had proposed to his wife.
Really?
At the event. And he was so weird, we thought he was joking, so we didn't let him do it, but in the end he'd actually proposed, but basically proposed during my speech, so it was so boring that he'd got it done while I was talking, evidently.
At least though, you got something to say in your speech then.
Yeah,
gets everyone up.
Yeah, exactly. It. So he's a nice fella, but he got, yeah, getting married.
I've been engaged before.
To your current wife?
Not to my current wife, previously to that.
Have you? No, you haven't.
I have. I've not told you about this. But basically, like,
Bernie always says you've been engaged before.
Yeah, he knows.
Does he?
Yeah, he knows.
I always thought that was a funny joke.
No, right. Well, nearly engaged. It's actually a bit of a funny story. So, do you ever remember... I've got the cough now.
Got a cough because we haven't slept.
Joseph Matthew, right? Never trust a bloke with two first names either.
I know, always said that.
For a start. He randomly... No one knows where he came from. He randomly got a trial at Cardiff Blues and it's pretty decent. So got through, played a few games for the Blues. Google him; you probably recognise his face if you.
All right.
Him. So, anyway, I've been out with current girlfriend at the time for probably 3-4 years, and
hang on, I must know this girl.
No, you don't. Yeah,
Vicky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I've been out for 3-4 years, and I thought, right, I'm going to set something up now.
Vicky with an I, mind you.
But I'm going to set something up now.
Don't judge.
In one of the hotels. So planned it. In a nice hotel in Cardiff.
Yeah.
Okay, so day comes, and I'm in reception, waiting for her to come in.
Yeah.
Lovely, got flowers up there, got balloons up there, all ready, primed.
Yeah.
And Joseph sort of sees me in the bar, comes running in, say hello. Mate, honestly, he trips over the corner of a sofa.
Yeah,
and he falls straight onto this glass table. It's unreal, right? And I'm fucking pissing myself. It's very, very funny.
But he didn't hurt himself.
Well, this is the thing. You think he didn't hurt himself, but all of a sudden he comes up and his blood everywhere. His blood coming out of his arms and his hands. Because obviously when he's gone fall down, he's fallen through this glass table. But his hands down there.
Less funny.
And there's blood everywhere. And my missus was a nurse. So she comes in and she's making a big, big... hoo-ha over him. Like, Joseph's missus and my missus were really good friends as well, so the connection there. So anyway, she's with him and we've called an ambulance and this ambulance has come and she's gone off with him to the hospital. So anyway, his hands are all knackered, he's bandages all over his hands, stitches all over his hands, but he's got a big glass in his eye. And I reckon over the space of about 3 to 4 weeks, it turns infectious, gets really, really serious, and he ends up losing his eye.
Oh.
And has to have one of these cotton patches over it. And my missus is
like a pirate.
Yeah.
This funny's getting less, this story's getting less and less funny, to be honest with you.
And my missus is a nurse, so she helps him with his recovery, and she goes in and sees him and makes sure he's all right, because it's obviously a big thing, losing your eye.
Hang on. I think I know where you're going with this. Is this the one who you broke up with, and she ended up quite liking the person she'd taken care of? Right, okay. Bernie's been tweeting me about this. Ask about the girl who left him. Is that true?
So probably about 3 or 4 weeks later, she just goes, sends me a text and says, that's it. I've gone off with Joseph. His missus is gutted.
Oh my God.
I'm gutted.
And were you gutted at the time?
I look back and I think, yeah, if it hadn't have been for Cotton Eye Joe, I'd been married a long time ago. Where'd you come from? Where'd you go? Where'd you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? No.
Oh, piss off, mate.
Yeah.
Piss off. So we're in Georgia, the two of us, and we've got a cameraman with us called Phil, who goes by the name Len, and he was once, he did a 4-day shoot with Lee Byrne in Claremont, thought he knew him really well, and then Bernie met him again shortly afterwards and introduced himself like he'd never met him before, and this guy's Twitter and Instagram handle is Len's Monkey. As in camera lens.
He does weddings.
Does weddings, funerals, bar mitzvahs. And when Bernie met him, he said, we have met. We saw him again. Excuse me. We have met. But I remember I came out to Claremont. And he was like, oh, yes. It's Len, isn't it? As in Len's Monkey. He calls him Len. Thinks his name's Len. And he was like, oh. And he goes, oh, I'll follow you on Twitter. Hang on. And he follows him. And Phil, who's actually called Len. Lenny's actually called Phil. I was thinking, oh, that's cool. And then a week later, he goes to DM him something, to this cool bit of footage he's got of him that he wouldn't otherwise have got, and sees that Bernie's unfollowed him as soon as he's gone home.
Yeah.
So such a shame, isn't it?
Judas.
But saying that, we both followed him on this trip, and I am going to unfollow him as soon as we get home, because there's no way he can further my career, so why would I follow him? That's how I look at it.
It was a nightmare trip getting out here, to be honest, wasn't it? We flew to... He's over there now.
He's looking at us now.
I wondered...
Len, back off, mate. It's not your pod.
Took a while to get here as well, didn't we? We had to fly to Istanbul.
Can you... You know,
mate, you're going to cough all podcast.
Sorry, look, I've got a bag. We haven't slept, have we? We haven't slept. So if you play professional football, you're not allowed to complain about anything. If you travel business class, you are not allowed to complain about your journey. However, please complain.
You're turning to Bob Fleming from The Far Show. Some of you will get that.
Okay, go on then. Tell us about the journey.
He's like David Attenborough, can't stop coughing, and when this rare animal starts to appear, he can't stop coughing and scares it off. Bob Fleming, that's what you are.
Yeah.
You want to get a bit of cod liver oil down you or something?
We'll tell everyone about our day yesterday, and then people will see why we might be a little bit fatigued. Yeah.
Okay, so it took a while to get here. We couldn't sleep on... He's coughing again. Couldn't sleep on the plane. It was 3.5 hours to Istanbul, 2 hours stopover in Istanbul. The airport was actually really nice.
It was actually nice airport. Atatürk. Not great at 2:30 in the morning, mind.
And then another 2 hours 30 to get to Tbilisi. So we're all pretty tired when we got here. Hour in bed, and then we went off to do a background check to meet the president of
that's
Georgia.
Right. Prime Minister.
That's the one.
Yeah, so we went to the Prime Minister's office.
Prime Minister, President.
Got through security and all that sort of stuff. So we're...
Yeah, so then yesterday was... coughing again, a long, long day. So,
guys, I'm going to be coughing a bit during this podcast because I'm absolutely fine. But I'm not feeling brilliant because I'm used to sleeping 14 hours a night.
I hate people that cough.
Anyway,
so 9 o'clock yesterday, we went down to the Georgian National Rugby headquarters. So we interviewed some of the players, watched a little bit of training.
Because we're 4 hours ahead here, it's like getting up at 4 to leave the hotel at 5.
Yeah,
kind of thing. So you can't sleep the night before, and when you're dead asleep, you know I've never slept over in my life till yesterday, and you actually called me in my hotel room and said we're all waiting for you. I was like, shit.
Yeah,
I was in the middle of a dream.
Delirious.
Delirious broken. But so yesterday morning it was Georgian rugby squad, wasn't it?
We interviewed the coaches, the players, Yeah. I had food with them as well. I had a look at them in the gym. And you go and you see a lot of players and you go into a lot of rugby clubs and you go into a lot of gyms. Now, it was a fairly basic gym, but most gyms are. You don't need that much equipment.
Perfectly good enough, yeah.
Yeah. But they were massive. Not so much the backs, but the forwards, the props, the back rows are so huge.
Yeah, it's...
I was a little bit surprised about how big the forwards were. Mostly the props.
I mean, it's not a myth about the Georgian lads. Mm. They were massive and strong and hugely muscular, weren't they? Like, they were massive units, like properly big, strong units. Like, we walked in there and, again, we've been around massive people lifting weights since we were teenagers. And it's like, holy moly, these boys are units. They are proper units.
Fat Alfred.
Yeah, well, you did. But one of their coaches, I didn't know this till we did a little bit of research for this trip, but Rich Graham, who coached me at Bath, who then coached Saris, who coached the Queensland Reds.
Spino.
I think the Wallabies. Spino, we called him, yeah. So Spindle. So Spino is their assistant coach, their attack coach. They've also got Calvin Morris as head of S&C, who used to be England's head of S&C. And they've got Matt Lovell as their nutritionist, who used to be the England nutritionist. So I sort of turned up and there were people I knew really well and have been coached by and helped by over the years here, and just great people. But they're one of World Rugby's three targeted unions, they said, so they get extra funding, which means they can bring in proper experienced international staff, basically.
Yeah, but also they got automatic qualification as well for the World Cup, so they get more funding for that as well.
Yeah, but it's interesting because what day is it? It's Wednesday here today. And we were there Tuesday morning. They play Canada this weekend in their first autumn test. And they're just getting players back. Their top players, their best players, basically, as soon as the dream for them is get a top 14 contract. So as soon as they get a top 14 contract.
Because you're going to get paid well.
Because you get paid loads. You get paid nothing here in Georgia. So they were just getting lads back. So a load of the best players, four or five of the best players, landed in Georgia at 4 a.m. on the Tuesday. And they got their first test on Saturday. That's as soon as they get them back, you know.
Do you know what I liked about it as well, though? They obviously recognised us, but that they gave us our space, didn't come over and annoy us, and have a chat with us and get our autograph. They just left us to ourselves, and that shows a lot of respect by them.
Speak for yourself, mate. They're all over me.
Well, yeah, everyone comes up to you and speaks Georgian.
One guy, no joke. He's one of the staff. I don't know what he does there. He said he's one of the managing staff.
Team manager.
Something like that. But he was not the guy who looked exactly like me, not him.
Okay. They all did.
Yes, true. The bigger guy, the older guy. And he played for years in France. And he said...
Do you want to pause this so you can have a big cough?
No. He said, you still play? And I said, no. And I said, I used to play it. Where did you... And all that sort of stuff. And then he said, I played for them. I said, I played there once. And he said, yeah, I remember watching the game. And I remember you watching play against Toulouse in 1998. And he looked over and said, was he playing? And I said, I can't remember. He said, I remember you playing against Frank Tournier. Then he was like, I remember you playing against Stade Francais in 2008.
You're the best.
And all these games. And he turns out he's an absolute... Oh, we've had some orange juice delivered by Len. Thanks, Len, Phil. Thank you. It's
Mate,
pity,
when you've got
is
a lot
it?
Of mucus and spit in the back of your throat, orange juice is probably the worst thing for him. He needs water.
I need a milkshake. So,
or a Hoover.
Thank you for the juice delivery, man. Yes, he remembered all these games. And it was like... I mean, yeah, he obviously loved scrums.
I mean, yeah, I didn't get that, but I can see a load of them looking at YouTube. I think it was a video of me when I back.
Yeah,
when I was
God,
playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It showed just, I think they probably had a little bit more respect for me and left me to it.
Not something like that.
So after that, we went down to some traditional...
Well, it was training ground, wasn't it? It was a load of stuff to camera. It was shots. Then it was five interviews. And then it was straight in the minibus to the Turkish Baths.
Turkish Baths.
Yeah.
Where we had to do a little piece. We don't want to spoil it, do we?
Speaking of the little piece, Shanks had to get naked and get massaged by a local fella who walked around on his back and bent him up and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, that's horrific. I didn't know what he was going to do. Next minute,
yeah,
he's pulling my legs back, pulling my arms back.
Yeah, he was...
I was like, I end up like being in a skydiving position.
Yeah.
You know, when you jumped out
the
plane.
It was like that, it was like that, yeah. From the Turkish bar, says that's an hour and a half, that's a couple of hours there.
I was quite surprised that you actually couldn't get in a bath. It was a hot bath.
Oh, yeah.
You can't get in cold and you can't get in hot.
No.
Okay.
Don't like either. I like it in the middle. Interesting one. Yeah, a mate told me once, a fellow heavier gentleman and heavy sweater, said to me, I said, God, I wish I'd much rather spend a summer walking to the North Pole than doing whatever, you know, doing the Marathon des Sables. One of the lads doing the Marathon des Sables, and I said, I'm not doing that, I'd rather walk to the North Pole. And he said, no, you're a big fat sweaty bastard, you're better off in hot weather. I said, why is that? And he said, well, wherever you are, when you exercise, you will sweat. So if you sweat in a really hot country, you can replace that by, you have to drink a lot of water, but you can replace it and you're fine. He said, you go somewhere really cold, you will sweat regardless of the temperature, and your sweat will freeze and it becomes dangerous. So contrary to your assumed opinion, you big, fat, heavy people are better off in warmer climates than you are in freezing cold climates. Okay. If you're gonna move.
Straight after that, to a Georgian TV channel. I think it was
Iberian TV for a chat show,
which didn't quite work because we had to have a translator back and forth.
Yeah.
Every single question, every single answer.
Yeah, our liaison guy, we've called Sherlock Holmes because he wears a funny hat. Sherlock had to translate. It was very odd.
Yeah, and I just lost interest after about 5 minutes.
Shanks got roped in, massively stitched up, and had to do breakdancing / wrestling technique on national Georgian television.
Yeah, we're talking about what we're doing for the rest of the day, and we explained that we were going to go traditional Georgian wrestling and that I was actually going to be the wrestler. And they asked me if I'd ever wrestled before. I said, yeah, loads. I sort of created my own technique. I've fused flash dance with wrestling.
And then flash dance with judo, you said?
Yeah, flash dance with judo.
They didn't get any of his jokes,
no,
by the way.
No, not at all. That wasn't even a joke. And Flash's like, go on, show him. And all of a sudden they move this table away and then everyone's looking at me and I'm back right into a corner. I've got to do something now. And I'm
Shanks is like, get up then, Flats. I said, no, absolutely not. You're on your own.
So, yeah.
Anyway, it's on Twitter.
Yeah, so that's what I basically did. It was impromptu, but give generously both dances. That's what I say.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So we did this chat show and straight from the chat show, we're back. So we've done all the rugby stuff. We've done the Turkish bath. We've done the chat show. And then it was off in the minibus. By the way, 2-hour drive, which we weren't told. We thought 20 minutes. 2 hours into the country. And the craziest, most dangerous journey, and I mean this, of my whole life. I mean, how did we not die or crash?
They don't care about overtaking, do they?
Unbelievable. I mean, proper head-on
jobs. I didn't know you could fit
three
cars into two lanes.
Yeah, unbelievable. So properly lethal, like not enjoyable lethal, like really, really unenjoyable.
Another thing we noticed out here, probably one in every three or four cars doesn't have a bumper.
Front or back.
It's gone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Completely gone.
I thought he was trying to find out what was in the boot of the car in front of us, that twat that was driving us.
So we expected 20 minutes down the road. 2 hours later,
Shanks has to go and wrestle the 5-time world champion, Petriashvili, 125-kilo world champion, Olympic medalist, absolute beast. We walk into the Hotel Olympique, which is the home of Georgian wrestling, and you got Olympic and world champions everywhere.
I was told I was going to wrestle someone that was like 5'6".
No, he was enormous.
He was 125 kg. He was about 6'6".
Yeah.
He was kidnapped when he was 11.
He was kidnapped, yes, by separatists and chained to a bed for 100 days. I mean, unbelievable. Yeah, serious bit of kit. Lovely man, actually.
Yeah.
But Shanks is, we've said this before, and Andrew Cotter listens to this, and he said, is Shanks really as strong as you say? And disappointingly, he is. Shanks is freaky, freaky strong. And so he lifts weights and stuff, but he's got these genetics, which is why he got 70 caps. And I'm blowing his own trumpet, but unbelievably strong human being. And up against this guy, I mean, you were like a doll. It was like a kid trying to throw an adult on the floor, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was not nice at all.
Just brutally strong with his own body weight, this guy. But yeah, if you're really nerdy, YouTube Petriashvili, world champion,
yeah,
and you'll see him in action. And believe it or not, I'm a bit of a wrestling fan, and I've actually watched him in action before.
Have you?
It turns out, yeah. So I watch all the Olympic stuff. I love it.
Yeah. So we did a bit of obviously had to be a little bit staged. You couldn't just smash me on the floor and get me in a suplex or a figure of eight leg lock.
Yeah, DDT.
But I said, look, let me just try and go for you. And you just got to defend me, and no chance.
Nope.
His hands were huge.
Yeah.
Like bigger than Andy Powell's hands. And Andy Powell's probably got the biggest hands I've seen. Just swatting me away. And I'm like 107
kilos.
Yeah, I had four layers of clothes on and some diamonds.
You're 107 kilos, yeah.
And got nowhere near him.
No.
Trying to get the hook and handles, get the leg up, not take him over
Yeah.
vertical, horizontal.
You couldn't get anywhere near him.
No way near him.
And he was laughing the whole way through.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was quite fun. But it was one of those. It's just one of those days. You got a lot to do, so you get up nice and early and crack on. And we got back to the hotel at 10 o'clock and ordered food and started eating our sort of steak in the hotel about 10:30, and then you can't sleep and all that sort of stuff. So it's we're not asking for sympathy, but these are long old days out here, you know. So but it's good fun.
Yeah, it is.
Got a lot done, and Shanks had to wrestle in a special wrestling suit. He had to break dance on national TV, and he had to get walked on by a Georgian massage therapist. So Shanks really put himself out there yesterday.
Yeah.
What up, mate?
Cheers.
Can I remind you, please, Tommy, that this is a rugby podcast?
Yes, it is. We've been talking about rugby.
No, we haven't. Have we?
Talking about Georgian rugby.
Oh, God. Not
Sleeping
really.
Giant, that is Georgian rugby.
Mm.
Ranked higher than Italy in the IOB rankings by 2 spots.
Shanks tried to stitch me up on national TV by saying, and Flats, who are your favourite Georgian players? Who should we look out for?
They told us to give an example of what we do because they're...
Oh, yeah, so we had to pretend we were presenting a rugby game. It was really odd.
So I said, here we are, half time, Wales v Georgia. Wales narrowly winning 51-0.
Yeah.
Dan Bigger's been good for Wales, so is John Davis. Flats, who's impressed you for Georgia?
Yeah, I was like, and he tried to stitch me up. So I was like, hey, since Marmouka Gorgodzi retired... You know, you wonder how they're going to win, but now they've got Chilichava.
Chimichanga.
Chimichanga. They got Chilichava on the tight head, who's the one player whose name actually sprung to mind. And then he tried to get me again, and I moved it on. Anyway.
Yeah.
Rugger. So we were at the Anglo-Welsh stuff, weren't we? Did the Channel 5 highlights. Longest day of our young producer's life, Gitto. Longest day of his life, I reckon. Because it took
us...
Just one of those days. They happen in showbiz, yeah? But... One of those days where it took us something like 109 takes to do some of the stuff, some of the easier bits we found very difficult, didn't we?
I struggled a little bit saying James Short in the middle of...
You kept calling him James Small, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Like 8 times.
It just came out. I can't help it. It's just on the tip of your tongue, it comes out.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite hard when you're doing a piece of camera and you're not looking at any highlights on the TV. You've seen them, but you can't talk as they're going on.
Yeah,
it's quite hard to describe them when you can't see it in front of you. So
yeah, and also the by the very nature of the Anglo-Welsh Cup, you know about a third of the players comfortably, and a third of them, other third you've kind of heard of, another third you've never heard of.
Yes.
So you are talking about players you've watched, but it's the first time you've ever said their name. And by the way, you're on camera.
You're not referring to any notes or anything like that.
No.
In front of you. You've got to remember 5 or 6 names in your head.
Schwing. Yeah.
And, so...
Shanks just said swing because he's a baby, but also because it's breakfast time here in Georgia and there is a lady at breakfast who is wearing a dress, but I'm taking it quiet in case she's English, a really short dress, like really, really, really short dress and over-the-knee velvet black boots to breakfast, which is kind of completely over the top. Maybe it's the Georgian way, but it's... It's rather fantastic, depending on perspective.
So, yeah, we're at Saracens that, and probably the coldest day
that's the coldest I've been in years.
While.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were so cold, we couldn't speak. And there's a clip on Twitter, isn't there, of us saying, hey, watch this game, you can catch up on My Five Online.
Yeah.
And you look at Shanks and that thing, and he's so cold, he can hardly speak. And I was like that until we rolled, and I faked it. And as soon as the camera said cut, I was like, back inside.
You know, that's what, if anything I learned, it was don't show your coldness.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're 135 kilos, you're generally warmer than everyone
else.
But
after that initial first take, we did get a little bit better.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Yeah.
It was fine. So it was good fun, actually. Interestingly, amazing game at Sarries, where Quinns won in the dying second. But Ibn Opki, the big prop who scored, he came off the bench, is... an old lady, and say he went to my school. I studied Benno Urbano, so did I. Dawson, Sheridan, Tom Mercy. I mean, there's loads of us went there. It's weird.
Tim Ducks
went there, but Alex Brown, who was at Exeter Chiefs. I mean, there and Andy Mullins in the old days. There are literally tons of professional props that have come out of that school.
Say the sporting department keeps recruiting great coaches, or
I don't know which ones of those were imported, as it were. I wasn't None until my day we weren't imported, but they did start importing players to win the Daily Mail.
No, coaches, not players. Like, is it?
Oh, they've had good coaches, but they've also imported players for the sixth form.
Oh, they have
to win the Daily Mail. Yeah, they have done that. They stopped doing it apparently, but basically they wanted to win it, so they started importing players and started winning it. So I don't know if Benno Abano, who plays at Bath, I don't know if he was imported for sixth form or if he was there since he was eight.
There must be a reason why so many players are coming through that. Private college,
yeah, private school. It must be. I always used to reckon, like, you looked at, I know it's a Dulwich College where I went, only went there for 2 years, but it's a big posh school and all that, not posh at all, but it's just a big amazing school. You walk around, I'm generalising massively here, but, and I won't be too specific because someone will be offended by it, excuse me, I genuinely have got a cough. You walk around Bath and then you walk around South London where my school was, and there is just a sort of, what's the word, inescapably, there is just way more to choose from in terms of genetic makeups, gene pools, you know, there's everything to choose from.
Georgians.
In South London,
Georgians.
There's no Georgians there as far as I remember. There's everything in Bath. There ain't that many. You get what you get, but so densely populated by different races, different whatever it is, different genetic makeups in South London, that we just had the most amazing athletes in our school.
Okay.
And they'd all been there since they were eight. It was just every school kind of had them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had white guys, black guys, Asian guys, all that stuff. We had everything to choose from, whereas in Bath, you don't get that. So I used to feel like we were at a massive advantage, you know, because we had these amazing athletes, and they do keep coming out of that school. It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, it was some good rugby being shown at the weekend, and a lot of youngsters through, and you get that. When youngsters come in and inexperienced players come in, you get a lot of turnovers, you get a lot of missed tackles, but you get a lot of tries as well. So the games do become quite exciting.
Yeah, they do.
Adam Radwan is one to look out for.
Oh, man.
Look like serious wheels. Looks
Radwan be the bad man, you mean?
A little bit. Radman do. looks like a little bit like Johnny May, I think, the style of running and how fast he is.
But he's quick, but he's also elusive, and he's got good footwork, and he's super exciting. And I was down at Chiefs as well, and Matt Kvesic hasn't played that much yet, but he played really well. And
yeah,
it was good actually. It was a good game down at Chiefs. There's just loads of tries in this competition, isn't there?
It is. But it's good as well. I do enjoy it because you do get to see, you know, hopefully the stars of the future coming through. So who their name somewhere?
Who are Wales playing this weekend?
Wales playing Australia.
No, they're going to get spanked.
Last time Wales beat Australia was 2008.
Any idea who was playing in the centres that day?
I say it every year.
Were you playing at 13?
Probably the only record I got, yeah, against Ryan Cross.
Skeletor. Ryan Cross is the guy who, in under 18s, Australia scores against England schools. We went on an unbeaten. We won the Grand Slam and we went an unbeaten tour of Australia, 8 out of 8. And we played against Aussie schools, and they had pumped New Zealand schools the week before, so they were a serious team.
Okay.
They had like Phil Waugh playing and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And Bolsh was the quickest thing, Ian Bolsh, the quickest thing we had ever seen in our lives.
Yeah.
No one was as quick as Bolsh. And Ryan Cross went round him twice to score. We were
really?
Like, holy moly,
okay,
who is this guy? So we kept it tight,
yeah,
stuck it up a jumper, beat him up front.
Quick about me now, because Wales are playing them.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks very much. Now, I'm not sure. I think Australia are a lot better than people make out and think. I think they're a class team that they haven't done probably that well.
They beat New Zealand the other day, didn't they?
Did they?
Yeah. Keep up, mate.
All right, I retract that statement. Australia are awesome. They've gone
through
a bit of a hard time recently, I think, in terms of where they are as a national squad.
In terms of not being that good.
I think it's going to be a lot harder game than people make out. And you just look at their team and you look at their players they've got and the skill, like Curtly Beale, Kurundrani, Falau.
All right, give me a result then.
Class everywhere. No, I'm not going to give you a result because I want to talk a little bit about it first. Now, Wales, they're going through, I think, a little bit of a transition at the moment because they're looking at a new 12. I think they're going to move away from being this.
Who are you going to play 12?
You can't just interrupt me in the middle of my conversation.
All right, mate.
I think they're going to move away from being this predominantly a one-dimensional team where they're hitting up the 12, they're going around the corner. They have to create a little bit more, and I think they've learned that from the Lions with the two ball players. So there's a couple of options for them at 12. One is Reece Priestland, one is Reece Patchell, one is Owen Williams. The chat on the street at the moment is Owen Williams is going to play 12, and that's going to take a little bit of time.
Oh,
you don't want him just to play one game at 12, and then that's it. he's out. You've got to have a run of three or four games. You've got to have a
at least.
You've got to have a period now where you're trying to re-identify yourself as a team. Find that balance and find that game, that attacking game that works for you. So you're going to have to sort of throw results out the window and just concentrate on improving as a team. So whoever they pick at 12, I personally think Rhys Patch will be a great 12. They're going to go with Owen Williams, who's a similar player, another ball player, but just gives them more opportunity to score tries out wide and get the ball in the hands of Liam Williams, of John Davis. You know, John Davis needs ball in hand with a bit of space. So does Steph Evans. So I'm not too worried about the result, but I want to see this team play a little bit differently.
Give us the back three you would pick.
I pick Liam Williams at 15. I pick Steph Evans on the wing. George North isn't fit, so I would have Lee Halfpenny.
Lee Halfpenny on the wing?
Yes. Yes, my friend.
Okay, my friend.
We've done a lunch with Michael Liner before.
Bet you there, Liam Williams on the wing, and I bet you Lee Halfpenny's at fullback.
Possibly. But my argument for that would be to the Welsh coaching team, why pick Liam Williams at 15 for the Lions when if you think he's the best 15 we've got, and then not pick him on the wing on the 15 for Wales? Seems strange.
It's a good argument, Tommy.
Yeah, but we're doing a lunch with Michael Liner.
Pre-game,
yeah, Pier 64. We got 60 people going and get the river taxi across to the game.
Oh, you'll have a lovely time.
And then out in Tiger in the evening.
Oh, you have a lovely time, won't you, mate?
Who England playing?
The Argies.
How's that going to
go? Should win that. There's chat that Rocco Degooney might get a game. Well, he's been retained for now. Some of the lads have been sent home. Rocco Degooney's one of those players that people are adamant that he should be playing for England because he's the best finisher and ball carrier in the country.
And he does score some unbelievable tries.
He is. He's the best. Ball in hand, he's the best player in England. I mean, not creatively, but ball runner, he's the best player in the league. There are times when he's untouchable, even against the best defenders. But there are also people that say his defence isn't right, like his positioning isn't right, and that sort of stuff. And people make a lot of yards down his wing a lot in the Premiership. But it'd be interesting to see if they give him a run, because I think Johnny May's not going to make it fitness wise. But that's an interesting one. And you get really excited about what team Eddie Jones might pick.
Slade.
But generally, they're reasonably predictable. I would have Slade at 13, absolutely.
Would you play them? Would you play Ford?
Farrell,
Slade.
Yeah, every day at week. You watch George Ford the last couple of weeks. It's just...
Defensively going to be an issue, though?
No, Owen Farrell hits hard. Henry Slade's tough as you like. And George Ford will never be a big hitter.
No.
But he makes his tackles well enough, and he's brave, and he puts himself... He doesn't dodge out the way. And the odd fly half, even at the top level, dodges out the way and just trying to avoid tackling. He doesn't do that. He's
but
tough.
But also, you've got to look at that. Not just England, but... teams in general, you've got to look at it as you've got to be positive in picking your team, because you've got to score tries. You're not picking someone who never misses a tackle.
Yeah.
You need to pick boys that are good with ball in hand, boys that score tries, because you're not going to win games anymore, really, just by kicking points. You've got to create.
You know, guess what? Marcus Smith at Quinns is never going to batter anyone in defence because he's tiny.
No.
But doesn't mean he can't be the best fly half in the country or one of them. So they'll actually absolutely pick those guys. Yeah, been an interesting selection, actually. I hope Sam Simmons gets a run at 8. Super exciting player.
This is going to be the Leo Vegas Bet of the Week game.
Oh, is
England
it?
England v Argentina. Yeah.
Well.
Just decided.
Well, England are going to win it.
Okay.
I say England by... I'm going to be punchy.
You reckon?
I want the children who need to win some money, but I'm going to be punchy.
I reckon England by 10.
I'm going 14.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
England by 14 or more. So Leo Vegas will get better odds on that with our bet.
Which,
and then the kids will win more
money.
Yeah. So I'm going there. All right, happy with that?
Should have a few questions, shouldn't we? Really, before we go,
go on,
just a quick one, guys and girls. We do have Sam Warburton on the live podcast next Monday. Please send him some questions for him. It's going to be quite embarrassing if the Lions captain has zero questions and they're all directed at me and Flats.
You get into him as well. Let's make him uncomfortable.
Yeah, get your questions in.
By the way, for those of you that are coming to our live pod in Bath, the first one...
Don't expect too much.
Don't expect... I mean, we... excuse me, it's bloody throat of mine. We love Goody and Jim Hamilton. Goody's a very old mate of mine. Jim's a lovely, lovely man. We love those guys, but we're not going to be doing songs and... You don't like them?
See him as opposition. Can't like them.
Yeah, we do really. But we're not going to be doing boat races well and songs and stuff. We love their stuff, but we're not. That's not us really. So we're going to be incredibly quiet and talking seriously. No one is going to be allowed to interact. No, I'm joking. But if you're coming, by all means, be prepared. Get prepared to stick your hand up and pile into me, Shanks, or Warby. We're happy with that.
I've got a question from Andy Meredith on Twitter. It says, thoughts on sliding in with knees on players after scoring? Never going to stop the score. Happens often.
Yeah, it does. Really annoying. Mm. Really annoying. And do you know what? Someone tweeted me. It might have been Andy, if it's not, apology. Someone tweeted me and said, this happens all the time. If only there were a highlight show to... If only there were a show to highlight it. Like, oh, if only Flats and Shanks had the bottle to highlight it. It's like, bore off, mate.
The problem...
We've got about 4 minutes in total to speak about six games, eight games. Piss off telling us we should have included one little thing. But it's a good point.
When someone's going to score a try, right, you're trying to cut them off from scoring under the posts, aren't you? So you want them to score out wide to make the conversion harder, which means hopefully...
But often people are just piling in.
Two less points for you. But it's also very difficult to stop when you're flying flat out. And it would only happen, say, 1 in 100 times where that player scoring a try actually gets caught and the ball gets dislodged from trying to go under the post. But you still never really give up. You still don't want to let them score. So it's quite difficult to stop yourself when you're going flat out.
Mm. But there was one the other day where I don't even know why
Leicester
Gloucester, there was an awful one. And it is genuine point. I mean, it's not for a highlight show because we don't have time. It's for a conversation show like, you know, Rugby Tonight or something. But absolutely, 100%, people doing that. So you should be, if it's really bad, you should be up. Why do you never get yellows and reds for doing that? You should absolutely get yellows and reds for doing that. There was an awful one the other day. I think it was Leicester Gloucester, was it? There was a really bad one. But also, at minimum, when we were kids and we did naughty stuff after the try was scored, you'd restart with a penalty to the opposition. So it could be 7 points, a decent goal kick, or a penalty on a halfway line, and we'll slot it, and you've conceded 10 points in a minute. So, you know, there's...
Yeah, get you on the IRB board.
That's probably the way to do it. But I do absolutely agree that should be hit harder, yeah.
Got a question, another one on Twitter. We're just doing questions on Twitter. It's probably the best way to get your questions in because Michelle never forwards the...
Michelle's given up. She's given up on life.
From Jason Lunt. I think Lunt. Jason Lunt. I think that's an L.
Let's hear his question first, shall we?
Barbar's playing in a Northern Hemisphere without a Northern Hemisphere player. Viable going forward.
No, it wasn't an L. It wasn't an L. It's just a joke, Jace.
Not really. It's sort of lost its way, really, and touched the Barbars, because gone are the days where you can field a team like they did in the 70s where Gareth Edwards scored that wonderful try. Players just aren't getting released. If players aren't going to be used for the Anglo-Welsh, which happens this time of year, and the Barbars game happens at Twickenham, then they're going to be rested. The clubs aren't going to want to risk players playing in the Barbars team to get
absolutely
to
not
themselves.
No, so absolutely not.
It's very, very difficult now, isn't it?
And is it viable? Probably just about, because people are still buying tickets and watching on telly. But
yeah, it has. It's still got that history to it. It's still
it's nothing
got
like
feel.
It was. Nothing like it was. But, you know, and you can say, well, the club should release them, but you're paying someone $300 or $400 grand a year. Are you going to release them for a dickabout?
This is the knock-on effect we see of professional rugby coming in now, where teams cannot play in these invitational sites anymore.
Can't even I remember years back. I mean, when we were young, I was 19 or 20 playing at Saracens, and the Barbars called and said, "Can we have Flatman to play in this game?" So it's Barbars against Australia at the Millennium. Can you imagine as a 20-year-old kid or a 19-year-old kid? And Francois Pienaar said no because we need him for Wasps the Wednesday after.
Yeah,
and they called again a while later when I was at Sarries, and then again when I was at Bath, and all three times I was refused release because I was a prop, and you just can't risk getting props injured because there's none left.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I never got to play for the Barbars because our chairman three times in a row, our DOR, wouldn't release me.
No, exactly. Max Dugdale on Twitter has also asked about Premiership clubs.
If I were a Premiership club owner, I would never release players to play for the Barbarians. As much as I love the Barbarians, I love it as much as you do at home, or in your car, or on your iPhone. But I would never, ever release players to get pissed and playing a dick around against the best teams in the world, asking for trouble physically.
Sean Hughes on Twitter obviously says, when you were professionals, did you ever go on the piss night before a game?
Once.
No, for me.
I went out with Matt Cairns and a mate of ours called Stu Maddox, and we popped out for dinner. We went to three restaurants near where we lived.
How old were you?
I was 21, 22.
Okay.
and we went out, and everywhere was full because it was a Friday night. It was really annoying. So we said, "Oh, let's just go into town." And we lived in town then, you and I. So we popped out, me, Kenzie, and Stu popped out, and we went to Leicester Square. And in the end, I mean, we got really, really pissed, like a really heavy night, and played Bordeaux the next day at Vicarage Road.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was a Saturday night and played on the Sunday. But I played Tighthead against Bordeaux the next day, and Kenzie played Hooker. And we, believe it or not, we actually won and both played quite well. And after the game, agreed we would never, ever do that again.
Yeah, got away with it.
Got away with it, but never do it again. Yeah.
Baggy on Twitter wants to know, what's the best unorthodox method you have seen to gel a team? Loctite?
Yeah. Do you know... Yeah. I remember the lads at Sale telling me about...
Because we're going to have to...
Yeah. John Mitchell, the boys were played really badly at Sale, and apparently John Mitchell got the boys in on a Sunday morning and said, everyone's in, no dicking about, we're training, and everyone comes in with like, shitting themselves because John Mitchell was crazy or aggressive, and he just had a load of kegs of beer, and he said, we're not leaving this room until they're all done. You know, and we're over it, it's just a loss. So I don't know, in terms of unorthodox, did the high ropes course at Longleat once, at Centre Parks. Will that do?
we did some juggling.
There you go.
But yeah.
Juggling. Excellent.
Yeah, John Neal came in.
I know John Neal, yeah.
We did some juggling. We did like pin a tail on the donkey.
Good times.
Yeah.
Not really, there's your answer.
Last question here. Andrew Nicholson on Twitter. Who is your next guest? Sam Warburton.
Sam Warburton.
Any chance Flats can get one on? Any Bath mates?
Well, we're doing...
Dewars would be a great guest. He's perp. Not sure they're real mates.
We could do. Yeah, we could get Dewars on. But he's kind of our job, isn't he? He's not a player. We could do that. We've got James Haskell coming on. We've got Lawrence Dallaglio coming on.
God.
Who's the other one we got after Warby?
We don't know yet.
Oh, don't we?
No.
Oh, because we were going to get Donico Callahan, but he's not available. We can't get him. He would have been fab.
UNICEF.
Yeah.
He is.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
I love listening and watching him. And watching him. So, yeah, I'm getting a couple on, but basically... Shanks is lazier than me. But yeah, we'll get some. We're going to get Dave Atwood on, weren't we? Because he talks really well. But
Freddie Burns.
We won't get a fucking word in, mate, if Atwood's on here.
Okay.
Anyway, get your questions in for Warbatron, the Warbinator, and we'll pile into him, yeah?
Thank you.